So as I was saying last night, it's very interesting who picks up on what, and I suspect that any number of us could have read the bit of blurb about the retreat and come away with a slightly different idea about what we're going to do. And it probably is a bit of a movable feast in my own mind as well as in yours. But what we called the retreat was, Badra and I came up with Pathways to the Beautiful Mind. So I want to go into this what's meant by this word beautiful. So the translation is usually translating the word kalyana, beautiful, lovely, ethically lovely qualities, or kusala and skillful qualities are also included in this broad term. So qualities of mind and heart that are lovely or skillful. And often this kalyana qualities are associated with the Brahma Viharas. So with metta, karuna, upekkha and mudita. But it is also broader than that. We can include any skillful, any positive quality within this. Things such as truthfulness or generosity we can include in these kalyana qualities. So what I had specifically in mind with this title, The Pathways to the Beautiful, was another grouping of qualities, and these are the five spiritual faculties. Faculties of faith, satta, energy, virya, sati, mindfulness, samadhi, possibly concentration, possibly stability of mind. We can talk about it in different ways. And wisdom, or panya, or pranya in Sanskrit. So these qualities that actually fit in really well with the particular part of the Satipatthana Sutta, they fit in very well with what is sometimes called the definition section. Which there you've got four of the five qualities. The only one missing in the definition section is faith, or confidence, or trust. So I particularly want to draw on mindfulness and right view, or awareness, wisdom, those factors. And in a way, the others will sort of array themselves around that main thrust. So it's a framework for how we work with our minds, a framework for meditation. And it's particularly receptive meditation. So we're looking, if you like, in the territory of spiritual receptivity in terms of our mandala of practice. But I think we're also working with in the territory of spiritual death, of really looking directly at what's happening in our experience, knowing things more as they are. So I'm going to say a little bit about the indriyas, the five indriyas, and I've drawn quite a bit from Bhante's or where he's written about them, which is the essential Sangharakshita, what is the Dharma, and a bit in the survey as well. So the Buddha apparently said that the five spiritual faculties were a point of psychological and spiritual equilibrium, and fully developed those qualities fully developed make one an arahant. A very high degree of spiritual realization is possible through cultivating the five spiritual faculties. And what I find interesting was that in the time of the Buddha, apparently the faculties were very much practiced together as a complete set, a bit like our mandala of five different aspects of practice. So you've got these five spiritual faculties. But over time, different schools in Buddhism tended to focus on one particular one. So they became more specialised, if you like, rather than the whole grouping being practised as a path. So the Yogacharans focused on concentration, on right samadhi. And the Abhidhamma and the Majjhimaka schools focused on the wisdom aspect, on panya. And the Pure Land schools focused on faith and devotional practices. So I was wondering if that's still happening in the modern day, if you like, whether we're looking at all, or whether we're focusing on one. And obviously different things are happening in different schools. But I think within our own, within Sri Rana, I think there probably is quite a broad focus. Each of these five is given value. But within the modern day school, there's also a lot of emphasis on mindfulness. So if we're specialising in anything, say secular mindfulness, there's a strong emphasis on that particular strand of practice. So the indriyas, the five indriyas, means that which belong to Indra, the ruler of the gods in ancient Indian mythology. And Indriya means a governing or controlling principle. Something I hadn't been aware of before, but there are these two different applications of the Indriyas. You've got the five spiritual faculties, which I've said a little bit about, but you've got the five sense faculties, and both are contained within this word indriya. So our five physical senses of hearing, touching, seeing, tasting and smelling. So in a way, what Bhante is saying is these are the governing and controlling faculties. They dominate how we live our lives. We live our lives through these sense faculties. We find our way around the physical world through these faculties. And we act on impulses stimulated by what we see, by what we hear, what we smell and taste, where our impulses are drawn towards or away from different objects through our senses. So we're very pulled around by our senses, pushed and pulled around, depending on whether we like the particular objects of smell or taste or touch or not. So Bhante talks about this as being quite sobering. This is our frame of reference, if you like, that mainly it's just through what lands on our particular sense at the time. And our lives are governed and controlled through what we experience through the senses. So we really need that second application of the five spiritual faculties to balance out the five sense faculties. Which Bhante says the five sense faculties are fully functioning. We don't really need to develop or cultivate them in any way. they're already quite sort of firmly dominant. But he says the five spiritual faculties that govern our spiritual life, they are often in embryonic form, and they definitely need help. They need some cultivation, some development. So Bhante says the spiritual faculties represent spontaneous and enthusiastic engagement with life in the fullest and deepest sense. So we can learn to act, if you like, from those spiritual faculties rather than primarily from our sense faculties. So when our spiritual faculties are developed, when faith is developed, when energy in pursuit of the good is developed, we don't stop using our sense faculties, and we need them. We need them to navigate around the world through our life. And they give us many opportunities to experience beauty and vividness and pleasure in life. Particularly perhaps through things like nature, through the arts, through music. Just this last week, actually, just a few days ago when the weather was a bit nicer, I was experiencing life through the senses quite vividly. Had a little holiday on the Hlin Peninsula, and the water was about 7 or 8 degrees, but we went swimming. And I really knew I was alive. Yes. But we need the physical senses in balance. There's quite a fine balance between just being open to what arises through the senses. And, if you like, pleasure becoming or remaining the governing factor in our lives. The teacher I sit with in Burma says, you know, if that balance, if we go out of balance in this way, relaxation and pleasure just take the place of whatever degree of embryonic spiritual faculties are there. And then there becomes only pleasure. And then we're in the realm of hedonism. So in spiritual life, we're always walking that path between hedonism and nihilism. So we're not looking to deny pleasure, but we're looking to guard against that being the main point of reference, the main sort of guiding principle. Am I doing this because it's going to feel good, it's going to feel nice? What's the what other factors are in play here? What's for the best? If you like, we're looking to have a picture that's broader than simple immersion in senses and sense pleasure. So with our practice, we start to develop a different relationship to our senses. So it's not that we have to have an oppositional relationship between the sense faculties and the spiritual faculties, but we can actually use our sense experience. In fact, we have to use our senses to help work with building our sense faculties. So we can use our senses to support practice rather than get lost in pleasure. We can actually have a different perspective on our senses or sense experience. Or I'll give you a little example. The time I spent on retreat in Burma, we would always say, we'd have a little sheet of paper, written in Burmese and in English. And it was a little sort of grace that was said before meals. And it was actually really lovely. So every day we chanted it together, a couple of hundred people. And what it said something like, this food has been freely given. And all the rice that we ate was given on the alms round that the bhikkhus did in the morning. So all the rice had been directly given by very, very poor people, actually. Because of their own faith in the Buddha, a faith in and wanting to support our practice. But the rest of the food had been given by the meditation centre because we were all there on a dana basis. We were all there completely freely, and then it was up to us what we chose to give. So this little verse highlighted that the food had been freely given, and it was given for us to support our practice. There's this very, very direct relationship. It wasn't given so that we'd have, the best possible food that we could have. It was fairly modest. It wasn't given to stimulate pleasure or to stimulate greed. It was a very... It was very direct, this little verse, in saying that this food has been given to support your practice. May you do the best with it that you can. So it's actually very motivating, it being put in such a direct way, that this isn't about pleasure. Though pleasure may arise because we've got a body, we've got senses, but this is about how to directly support your practice. And I found it really encouraged me to take just what I needed. Initially, it's quite easy to take more than you need because you don't get any dinner. You just get breakfast, and you get breakfast at 6 in the morning, and you get lunch at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then you don't eat for the rest of the day. The Burma diet, I called it. It's tempting at lunchtime to think, oh God, this is it. 18 hours, I better sort of really fill my plate. And then over time you find out that you don't actually need to do that. So just taking enough, and enough to support the body to be able to sit and walk during the day, the mind to be alert enough, not overly sleepy through having more than is needed, and not suffering too much with hunger pangs that would take my attention away. So it's a very, very good practice, and quite humbling that it had been given so freely. I think especially In the West, when we have a bit more of a sort of reciprocal relationship, I'll give you something, and you give me something in return. So that's really what we're doing with our dana culture, often in Tri Ratna. So during the week, we'll do two main things. So firstly, I want to unpack what the spiritual faculties are and cultivate them directly through various different practices, meditation practices, devotional practice in the evenings mainly, and some awareness exercises on the cushion or off the cushion. So we'll directly cultivate these beautiful, skillful, positive states of mind. But we'll also be exploring our sense faculties, our sense indriyas, from the perspective of awareness, of mindfulness. So what happens when we're present to our sense experience rather than acting from it? and bringing a perspective of a wisdom perspective, or a clear seeing, right view, bringing in right view to our moment-to-moment experiences, to see more clearly what's happening. If you like to see how the Buddha might have looked at things, rather than from our more conditioned way of seeing, through our habits, through our views and ideas. So being receptive to what's happening through our physical senses and using them to help cultivate the spiritual faculties. So, as I said, that we're going to be using awareness, mindfulness, awareness, I'll use those synonymously, as the main tool, if you like. And some of you will know that mindfulness is in the centre of the spiritual faculties. It's the only faculty where it's not seen as necessary to balance it out with something else. Generally, the faith and wisdom faculties are seen to sort of balance each other out, to stop going to an extreme on either end. And the energy and concentration are also seen as a pole or a spectrum that balance each other out. But mindfulness is in the middle. And I think it's Bhante who says you can't have too much mindfulness. You can be mindful in different ways, or there can be near enemies, I think, to what might what we might think of as mindfulness. So perhaps we'll go into those a little bit. You know, when we might feel that, oh, this is mindfulness, but maybe it's a bit of hypervigilance. Perhaps there's a bit of the quality of effort has become a bit strained or too lax. So effort is obviously the territory of virya, of the energy that we use. So that supports mindfulness. So I think another way of looking at these faculties is that they all, if you like, I can't remember where I heard this, but someone told me that mindfulness or sati, it always arises with other qualities in the mind. Sati plays well with others, was how it was put. So you've always got these other qualities, and actually, if you can have the spiritual faculties, if you like, playing with sati, then you have a very profound quality of mind, but actually quite accessible. So at some points during the week, it can be something that you do. Perhaps we might be focusing on awareness or mindfulness, but you can check in with, is there some faith or confidence in what I'm doing here? How I'm doing it. Is there a glimpse of a sort of Dharma perspective, perhaps in the back of the mind? What's the energy like? Am I pushing here, or am I actually can't be bothered mind? Is there some stability of mind? Or is the mind completely sort of wild and all over the place? So we don't ask these questions to give ourselves a hard time if something's not present, but for information, and to perhaps sometimes by the noticing that something is not there. Just asking the question can help bring it about. So perhaps there is the effort's too strong, we're trying too hard. And just by noticing that, asking the question, noticing it, it allows a releasing or a letting go. Can relax back into awareness of what's happening in this moment. So I'm going to say, I'm going to leave it for now, but a little bit later I'll say a bit more just about this particular way of approaching mindfulness, because there are lots and lots of ways of approaching mindfulness. I think in Burma alone they've got about 40 different ways of practicing with the Satipatthana Sutta material. So this is one particular way that I'm going to introduce. But let's do some sitting first, and then maybe have a little break, and then I'll say a bit more after that.